I'd really like to wait for a lot more people to show up, but someone tells me that's not going to happen. Well, so much for polling the audience. Well, the topic that we're going to discuss today, really, the title is Transparent or Top Secret, but it's really about how official team and league websites and sports handle the flow of communication, flow of information, and manage content. I had, before my current job at AmericanEagle.com, was a national web developer. I had served for about 13 years with the New York Giants. Timing is of the essence. I left right at the start of training camp this year, so missed the wonderful playoff run, although I was able to attend the game. But in that capacity, I was director of digital media and responsible for our web and anything that, you know, correspondent the team didn't know what to do with, and they just kind of threw it in the new, what it was now, digital media area. To the left of me are Jen Hinkle with the Washington Redskins, Derek Eagleton with the Dallas Cowboys, Jamie Boris, CTO of NFL.com and NFL Digital Media Group. And if you can, maybe just talk about what your position entails with your respective clubs and organizations.
Right, I'm Jennifer Hinkle. I'm manager of online services at the Washington Redskins. I've been with them since October of last year. Prior to that, I was with the Ravens for three seasons, working in the same capacity.
I'm Derek Eagleton. I'm the internet director for the Dallas Cowboys and been there since 1998. Manage everything that has to do with internet, or as Kevin said, anything that they can't figure out where it should go has something to do with a computer they tend to throw my way. So that's my job.
I'm Jamie Voris. I'm the CTO for the NFL's Digital Media Group. And so I manage all of the technology for online, mobile, home entertainment technology. And as the technology guy, I am completely unqualified to talk about content. But I think that Kevin has me here because of the changing relationship that the league has with the clubs. NFL.com had been outsourced for about 10 years to a couple different companies, ESPN and CBS. We just took it back in-house in the last year. I built out my whole group, and so now we're actually managing those properties at the league level. Additionally, just a couple months ago, the league decided that we would be producing all the backends for the club websites as well. So I imagine we'll talk a little bit about that later.
I had this whole idea of polling the audience to see how many people, you know, follow their favorite sports team or league website through the official site as opposed to ESPN or CBS Sportsline. So I'd still like to do that. So for those who are here, if just a show of hands, how many of you, A, have a favorite sports team, and do you follow them through their official team site? Okay, well, all right, so it's a little bit, probably about the majority there. How many of you look to the official team site first as opposed to ESPN or the daily local newspapers? All right, that's actually higher than I would have thought. NFL, any sports team websites. NFL.com could be the official team or the league site. So whether it's, if you are a fan of the NFL, it would be NFL.com, or if you're a fan of the Giants, Giants.com. It's probably the only time you're going to get someone from the Giants, Redskins, and Cowboys on the same panel. This is, in all seriousness, I've been there for, was there for about 12 years, and as much as our teams, there's a hatred and a rivalry, I would say... I probably have the closest relationships with people at the Redskins, and I can't believe I'm going to say this, the Eagles and the Cowboys. But anyway, so just to get started, one of the things I like to do is just start talking about what your respective club or league office's position is on dealing with breaking news. I can say from the Giants, we definitely skewed toward the side of the spectrum that was a little wary of scooping the news, and not just because... the information was sensitive or we just didn't want the information out yet. There was also a very concerted effort to not tick off the local media, which I thought was specific to the Giants. So it wasn't just that we don't want to talk about this player signing because it's not official yet or it's just a rumor, but it was also we had such a good relationship, or at least I should say as good of a relationship as there can be between an official club and your local PR, your local media, newspapers and dailies, that they had started complaining once the internet came around. Well, now when you put it on your team website, you're scooping me. So the league had really exploded through a great relationship with the media, not just newspapers, but national television and radio media, and we were a little bit more sensitive to that. So from a Giants perspective, we've always skewed closer to, you know, you're probably not going to get the breaking news story, very rarely at least, through Giants.com.
Especially from the Ravens, it had absolutely nothing to do with the media and scooping them. It had more to do with always being the most accurate source, and sometimes that means not being the first to break it. There's a big difference between agreeing to terms with a player or signing one. They ran into the problem with Terrell Owens a few years back where, yay, we broke the news, but it lost a lot of credibility for the site because he ended up not signing, going with the Eagles up the road. And ultimately, I think our fans want absolutely to find the truth on our site. And we compete with the local media because they all have agents as their sources. So agents are eager to get their players in the news, especially if it was something positive. So they're rushing the local media to get it out there, where we really could not say anything until it was in ink. So
we actually take a very similar approach to them from the standpoint that we like to let me back up by saying the first thing that I was told when I first came in to manage the Cowboys website was always report the news. That's your job, is to report the news. Our competitors are the local media, and we want our reporters out there digging and finding the story, whatever the story might be, and wherever the truth leads you, that's what we want to print. So from that standpoint, our ownership was very proactive in allowing us to do that. Now, when it comes to breaking news, because of the PR department and their relationship with the local media, they have to be very cautious about it being perceived by the local media that we're taking their job. You know, we want to give them the opportunity to have a fair advantage or a fair chance to be able to break news. And so from that standpoint, our PR department kind of straddles the fence. What they do is they allow our reporters to be able to operate inside the building in a way that other local media can't, because they know the players and the coaches, and they can literally walk into their offices, walk into the locker room anytime. They have access that the rest of the media doesn't have. Now, as a flip side of that, the PR department tends to do things like have a special meet between the two main local newspapers, their beat writers and our players or coaches, to give them some access that kind of offsets the fact that we have that unlimited access inside the building. So all that being said, you know, we break news, but at the same time, our PR department is very cognizant of making sure the local media doesn't feel excluded.
Yeah, I think that's pretty similar to the way that we approach news as well. We will break news where it makes sense, but as Jen said, you know, we're really focused on accuracy. There's a much higher premium put on kind of the accuracy and the value that comes from the league site. You know, if we print it, it must be true, and there have certainly been pretty public cases where news got ahead of fact and that had serious ramifications for people. So we want to be accurate. We'll break news where it makes sense. We have, at the league level, we have a little bit of a different challenge in that we have kind of this states' rights, federal rights issue of when what news belongs to us and what news belongs to clubs. And, you know, when there's news that is specific to a club, in a lot of ways it's kind of the club's domain to break that news or to decide how that news, they're going to handle that news first. At the same time, we're hypersensitive to the fact that we need to be honest in how we approach things, and so we don't want to be perceived, and we don't want to be kind of the house organ where, you know, we sanitize all the news. We're going to be honest about things, and I would say an example of that would be kind of the Michael Vick situation, that, you know, that we didn't run from that, we didn't hide from it, we told the honest truth and you know, presented the story in an unbiased way and as openly as we could. So we're not necessarily going to break the news first. We're going to make sure we get the right story and we're going to handle it.
Has there been a recent example that you could cite of a breaking news story that was, you know, for the most part, from what we're saying, probably scooped by the local news first, but has there been anything in the last couple of years that broke that you could think of you handled differently, that kind of, you know, strayed from your normal approach, or at least presented a challenge, you know, maybe a all right, how are we going to handle this? Because this is a little different than the norm. Derek, is there any?
Yeah, it's ironic that she mentioned, that Jennifer mentioned Terrell Owens, because ours also involved Terrell Owens a few years ago, the accidental overdose. And there were, obviously, that was a huge national story. I mean, when it started breaking, not only were we noticing the site, I mean, that story popping up on DallasNews.com or, you know, ESPN.com, but it was on ABCNews.com and CNN.com. I mean, it really transcended sports. And so we had to really be very careful. Number one, we didn't want it to appear. This is always a thing for us. We don't want it to appear to the consumer that we're shying away from stories. If it's a story out there to be told, we have to tell the story. So we had to get something up. But the problem was everybody was creating their story based upon speculation and innuendo. No one knew what had really happened. And the way that we handled the situation was we basically put out the story as, okay, here's what we know at this point. We know that Terrell has been hospitalized. He was hospitalized at this time. Right now, that's as much information as we have. Stay tuned to DallasCowboys.com for more information. And what we learned out of that situation was we always have to be accurate. So it's okay to give people what you know and stop short of running with the speculation that everybody else is putting out there and simply say, look, we don't know anything more. There are no more facts in this case. Fact is, right now, this is all speculation. And once we get the facts, then come back to us and we'll make sure that you know the facts of what happened. And it ended up that a lot of organizations had egg on their face after that situation because a lot of them ran with the story that he tried to commit suicide. And the fact of the matter was, there was nothing that said that it was an attempted suicide. It really was an accident, according to the people that were there.
Yeah. I think, you know, to your question about, you know, is there anything that that we've had to treat differently, it's a little tough for us. We've only existed for one season, so there is no different or normal for us. It's just how we've reacted. There have certainly been some unique situations that happened in the last year, and I'm sure Jennifer will talk about Sean Taylor and you know, the tragic situation there. And then another one recently, Brett Favre's retirement, and if you followed that story, it kind of got broken in a very odd way because I don't think it was actually when it got broken originally. It kind of appeared on the Green Bay Packers website, and I don't think it actually was in any way intended to be an announcement. I think it was an accident. I think it was a test page that somebody put up and accidentally got out, and then ultimately turned out to be right. But you know, I think those two stories, you know, Sean Taylor and Brett Favre, were breaking stories that we covered. And I think the unique situation that we have is because we our offices are in Culver City, California. We're in the same space as the NFL Network, the cable channel that the league runs. And so the big benefit to us is that we can kind of piggyback on their programming, we can enhance their programming, and so we kind of, in a lot of ways, present a united front with them that we are able to cover things in kind of a more holistic way, both on the web, you know, online, and on the cable channel as well.
I think speaking also what Derek said is you're doing your fans a total injustice if you don't say anything. And basically, a lot of sites have gone with just stating the facts, just giving a simple PR statement that you give to the media as well to acknowledge that it's happening. You can't ignore the issue. You can't pretend it's not going on because that's a quick way to lose traffic and lose the trust of your fans because they're all expecting to come and have you say something about, no matter how bad the situation is, no matter how sensitive, there's always some kind of fact to report. And you don't have to elaborate on it, but... And we really don't get into storytelling if it's that touchy of a situation, but if it's at least it's acknowledged on the site, I think fans appreciate it.
I think fortunately, and I have to stop considering Giants as we, but there was an instance just this past week where Coach Coughlin's contract extension has been discussed and published in the newspapers, I would say, for a solid 2 weeks, if not more, but it wasn't official yet. And so the Giants didn't allow any statement, whether it's just through PR, through local media, or anyone, until it was made official on the website. That I don't think coaches' contracts are that sensitive. A lot of times where you'll see this a little bit more prevalent is with player contracts. And that's not just because we don't want to comment it before it's official because something could go wrong, but technically, as NFL member clubs, and just so you know, there's actually other member clubs here in the audience. Steve Harbula with the Denver Broncos is sitting over there. Street Paul Shaw, also with the Redskins, is over there. Nick Shank from the Texans. So if anyone likes any of those teams, you can harass those guys as well. But in addition, when it comes to player contracts, because there are so many sensitivities with the management council, the league management council that regulates and monitors all contracts, you physically can't report that you've agreed to terms even or have a contract with a player if it isn't official and hasn't been approved. We had an issue the year after we went to the Super Bowl in 2000 and lost to the Ravens. Were you with the Ravens then?
No,
you missed that boat too. That's how I feel. But when we lost to the Ravens that year, we re-signed Jason Sehorn and Tiki Barber, and I was arguing to try to push the envelope since we had our own website up since like '98. So I was like, we really need to start, you know, not waiting a day after the press gets this, and at least breaking in at the same time you're sending out a press release. So they said, fine, well, why don't you put up that, you know, we just got off the phone with Seahorn and we've agreed to terms. We're like, this is great. You know, for the web department, this is awesome. We're going to put something up that hasn't been reported for 5 days. It's actually going to be breaking news. So what set us back about counting on 8 years now is that we did that, and then the league had come back and said, you can't report that you've just agreed to terms. If the contract isn't official and approved, you can't report that you agreed to terms, because technically, until the contract is approved, there is still that window that his agent can negotiate with other teams. So what they said is, it's a PA, an NFLPA, which is the Player Association, and a league thing, which is that we don't ever want to hinder a player's ability to, you know, just get more money from another team. So if you say you agree to terms on Monday and you don't sign the deal till Friday, you know, we can argue that that's 5 days. Another team could have had a chance to negotiate with him and he could have gotten more value. So
I will chime in and say this. When it comes to players and really anything that's not on field, everything that's off field, those areas where we won't get into rumor and innuendo and speculation. However, when it comes to players and that sort of thing, we're very open to the idea of discussing those things. And if we, let's say, for example, a player is negotiating with our team, we'll release, you know, they're in negotiations. We'll release they're close to a deal. Because for us, it's all a process and we think we can straddle that fence without going too far. It's okay for us just to say, okay, they're talking, they're close to a deal. That's how we'll word it in a lot of instances when other, you know, sites may be reporting that they've agreed to terms. We'll just say they're close on a deal, and something, if something's going to happen, it's likely to happen over the next couple of days, that sort of thing. But, you know, for us, if it's on the field type stuff, if it's about players and contracts and that sort of thing, we want to discuss those things openly with our fan base, because that's kind of the point of being a fan and being able to talk about your team, is that you want to talk about all the scenarios and all the possibilities, and so that's kind of how we approach it.
You know, similar to breaking news issues, but I think different, are off-field issues. So we've just discussed areas where there's news, it's out there, it's facts, and it's, you know, the team's eventually going to address it. It's just a matter of timing for the reasons we just spoke of. But then there are also situations where, and you touched on a little bit before with Terrell Owens with the accidental overdose, but then there are off-field issues, which are what I found with the Giants is there's this kind of arbitrary process by how we decide what are we going to publish, what are we going to talk about. One instance where I could talk about an off-the-field issue was our defensive tackle a few years back, Keith Hamilton, was pulled over and arrested, and he had drugs in his car. Now, you know, the story broke basically the next morning, and it was in the papers and in media. We didn't address it. I may screw up the dates here a little bit, but we didn't address it for a couple weeks, maybe even until a month, until he was made available to the press per league rules whenever we started minicamp. In other words, it happened during the offseason, and technically we don't need to make players available, but once there's an official practice or other team event, you need to make your players available to the press. So we didn't address it for close to a month after that, and it was only because he spoke to the media and then there were comments he had on record. So as a website, we just basically reported Keith Hamilton discussed his event. That kind of hurts the credibility of the team site, and what it does is, and this is my argument used to be with ownership, is that if we're not reporting about this, fans are going to keep going to your ESPN.com or your local paper blogs, and we need to find a way to come to a middle ground where we can address it without reinforcing this rumor mongering. You know, you mentioned Terrell Owens. Has there been any other instances where there were off-field issues? I know we're being a little redundant because you also talked about Mike Vick, but does anything else come to mind about an off-field issue that had some sensitivities to it?
Kind of what we touched on before was you're doing your fans an injustice by ignoring it. We dealt with Jamal Lewis being arrested, and I think the best thing the team could do would be to support him, put out a statement, but keep it at that. You don't get into the legal facts. You just get into the player. This year, our biggest off-field incident was obviously Sean Taylor being murdered, and we took a different approach in that we really wanted to pay tribute to Sean. He's a coworker, a colleague. He's one of our own, and we wanted to give our fans a place to come mourn, and we absolutely didn't talk about any of the facts. I mean, touched on what happened, but there was no speculation. There's no discussion of the legal process that is still ongoing with what happened to him. So it was kind of a new approach for off-field things where you just wanted, really, it was just a special tribute for what happened.
Luckily, I got to the Cowboys after their fun times of the 90s when they were having so many off-the-field issues. But there have been a few since I've been with the Cowboys, and I think the one that probably made us really evaluate how we handle this outside of the Owen situation was Nate Newton's situation a few years back when he was caught with the twice with the 100 or so pounds of marijuana.
Pounds of marijuana.
Yeah, it was quite a bit, and not once, but twice. And it was a very weird situation because of the fact that Nate was very close to the organization still, and even to our department. I mean, now that he's paid his debt to society, he even does some podcasts on our website. But you know, it was one of those situations where we had to evaluate, okay, how far do we go with this story? And ultimately, we came back to the conclusion of, hey, we have to report the news, no matter how hard it is for us to do it, no matter if it's one of our own and a guy who we really like and everybody in the building loves, you still got to report the news. And so we did just that. We reported the facts of the case. It was a legal matter, so we reported it as a legal matter. We weren't the first one because we weren't running to do the story, but we certainly covered it as any responsible news organization would, and we put out the facts on it and took it from that. And that's really all we can do at the end of the day, is just kind of report the facts of the matter.
Yeah. As a national news organization, you know, we compete with kind of the ESPNs and Foxes and Yahoos the world, and everything is case by case. You know, there's no hard and fast rule on how to approach it every single time. Every single situation has its own merits, and the real challenge is that there are very few things that happen off the field that don't affect on the field. And, you know, we're very focused on touching on all the topics that affect the on-the-field performance. But the reality is, you know, something that big that happens off the field is going to affect on the field. But, you know, for those of you who were in the 37 Signals panel yesterday or the presentation, you know, he made a great point exactly about this. He said that just because you're silent on a topic doesn't mean everybody else is going to be. It doesn't mean the Internet's going to be. And so, you know, you have a responsibility to address it.
You know, that's actually a great segue to the next question, which is that how has or has your organization's position on controlling the flow of information, breaking news, off-the-field topics changed? And if so, do you think it's for the better or worse or more open or less? Jamie, I know, you know, the new NFL.com, the NFL Digital Media Group that you're heading up is relatively new, but there is what NFL.com used to be, which was very official, press release, no rumor mongering, anything. I can actually cite an example where last year, for those of you, you know the NFL or even more familiar with the Giants, you know, Coach Coughlin, you know, and Eli have not been, you know, Mr. Popular the last couple years, and they've taken a lot of heat. And last year, it was to the point where Adam Schefter broke a story about, you know, anonymous sources in the locker room reporting, you know, there's a revolt and all the stuff, and Coughlin's on his way out. And it was probably the first time, and I don't know how often, and maybe at the league level, if you've experienced it in the last couple years or so, but where the league was very aggressive with a story. Where they weren't like that before. And I know that that's because the league is now, NFL.com is now part of the NFL Network, and you're competing with ESPN, so you have to kind of push that envelope. That was an instance where, as the Giants, our communication department was somewhat surprised because we're like, you know, it's bad enough when we got ESPN and the local news taking care of this. You know, it's hard now that NFL.com and NFL Network are now this media source that, you know, maybe writing or reporting on something that doesn't necessarily paint the most flattering picture of the locker room. I think it's for the better because it lends credibility to the league site. I would be selfish, as I said, you know, you shouldn't have done that. You had to write it. It was a story. Adam's probably risen to, you know, I think before Adam, probably maybe your Jay Glazers and your Mortensons were the top guys. I think Adam's probably the top guy now, which is, you know, it was interesting because I didn't think he would be able to have that kind of capital being an official league guy, but it's worked out. But that was a situation where, you know, there was not a conflict, but, you know, at one point, I know our communications department was kind of taken by surprise. And I know there was a revision to that story. I don't know if the whole story was taken down, but I know there was some revisions to how that was articulated. But again, getting back to the base of the question is how has, you know, the philosophy of content and the flow of information change. And if I've kind of already answered that in what I've discussed, my apologies for being redundant.
Okay. Yeah, no, I think, I mean, you're exactly right. I mean, for 10 years, NFL.com was outsourced. And you know, first it was to ESPN and then to CBS. And the reality is in those relationships, you know, they kind of did their own thing, and the league did have a lot more control over it. Now that the league is actually building, you know, we're building and producing our own site, and we are becoming an information destination on our own, emphasis all on openness and honesty, you know, just be truthful in the story, and you know, as kind of, I think, started this point, other people will talk about it. You know, just because we don't talk about it doesn't mean other people won't. And so I think as a news and information organization, again, accuracy is most important. But beyond that, openness and honesty, you know, we have to report on it to be credible.
Sure.
Derek, just how do you think the Cowboys have changed?
Yeah. Ironically, we haven't changed much. I mean, like I said, the first day I walked in, it's always been report the news as you know it and just make sure that you're accurate.
Which now, is surprising because Jerry Jones in the beginning was always talking about being aggressive in terms of inside access right. and cameras in the locker room and so on right. and so forth. But yet you don't think that's manifested itself really in how the web's...
Not necessarily. I mean, our biggest challenge came when Bill Parcells became the head coach and mainly because... He was just, he's the kind of person that's very, what's the right word?
Clandestine? Secretive.
That's part of it, yeah. But he's paranoid. He really believes that everybody's out to get an edge on him. And so he was very, very cognizant of the type of information that we put on our website. Ironically, this is a guy that doesn't even have a computer in his office, has no idea how to use it, but had his secretary look for what we put on the website and was oblivious to what everybody else put on the website. So was always coming to my office to say, hey, why are you guys running this story? Not knowing it's on five other websites out there. We're not breaking anything here. But the belief was just that, well, this is our website. We can't lend credibility to it. So there was always this ongoing battle. And, you know, our ownership was still firmly planted in the idea of our website is a news organization. It has the responsibility to find the news and report it. And in that instance, there were a lot of times that Bill just had to kind of suck it up and deal with it. But that was really the only challenge we've had. Outside of that, it's always been, you know, a very clear mantra, and mainly because ownership made it so.
I think there's a huge divide in the league, especially right now, between this old school mentality and people who know how to use computers. And so it's just gotten to be teaching them that it's going to be out there, and the best you can do is, you know, earn that trust with the front office and know that you're not going to go out and speculate and use a lot of opinions and bash your own people in-house, but that it's going to go up because it's the only way to compete these days with the rest of the local and national media.
You mentioned the front office. That's actually the next question here. You've got your players involved. For the most part, I think we all get our players involved. Chats, just making them available to almost every team now has their own beat writer. Some teams have more than one. So it gives more of a daily newspaper feel to it. But in addition to your players just being available and cooperating with your web staff, doing interviews, doing chats, video pieces, how important is it? And it's kind of an obvious question, but how important would you say it is for the ownership and the front office people to get involved, your general manager, obviously your head coach, but also ownership? Do you feel, is it that important? Can you say, hey, listen, we can get by without it, or we couldn't get by if they didn't participate? And I don't mean just participating in content, but getting involved in the process of discussing how we're going to handle issues.
I think it's imperative that everyone's on the same page as to what kind of news that you release and how you release it. I know with Ozzie Newsome, I earned a rapport with him, so I knew what he would let fly or what I needed to go upstairs and run by him. As far as participating, it's funny because the fans love when they can get the inside scoop. Brian Billick used to write this amazing, super long blog once a week about everything that's going on behind the scenes, the play calling, and then next thing you know, the fans love it, but the media are like, we start losing, and they're like, why is Brian writing all this blogging stuff instead of watching tape and changing the plays? So it's a tough call right
but
there.
But Brian was also very technically literate in all ways. I mean, I remember...
Brian's a PR guy, so...
Yeah, and he was on the dating game once, too. So, but I remember seeing a piece where Brian was... They at least positioned him, and I don't know if it's just Brian let it be known and other coaches were like this, but Brian and his coaching staff were the most tech savvy in terms of they were the first ones really, you know, handling laptops on a day-to-day basis and breaking things down and using their IT department more in their scouting process than other teams.
Absolutely. Our IT department at the Ravens has its own software that's used throughout the scouting, and Brian was very much behind that and researching new companies. Our website really moved out of IT because of that reason. They were focused on the football operations side, rightfully so. Without a team, you won't have a website. So,
Derek, you're somewhat fortunate. I was always envious of Derek in some way. I mean, he's got a lot of other challenges that we didn't have the Giants, but Jerry Jones Jr., who also was acting VP, correct, really took the internet under his wing from day one. So you've had a little bit more support and participation from ownership.
Yeah, that's one of the things that's beautiful about our situation is that my direct supervisor is Jerry Jones Jr. So pretty much anything I need to get done, I just go into his office and say, hey, we need this, and he just makes it happen. So it made it a lot easier for us, and I'd say a lot of other clubs had it, you know, just explaining to him the importance of all these different, you know, aspects of internet. And the fact that he trusts what we're doing and he's seen that, that we've been able to put out a good product, it certainly helps us. But with regards to participation, ironically, we don't get a lot of participation on our website from executives, coaches, that sort of thing. We really rely heavily on the players, and we have them interacting with our site quite a bit. And what we've realized over the last couple of years, since we've been started doing some live broadcast, live shows, is that in a lot of ways, we've used our own internal people to kind of, and these are reporter type people, to kind of be the face of the website. And that, in a lot of ways, drives as much traffic as putting the players on there, because the average everyday fan, in a lot of ways, relates more to that guy, you know. And the example is, you know, we have a couple different live shows we do. I do one of the live shows. One of our lead columnists does another live show. And, you know, one of the things we always hear from people is, hey, I just like being able to listen to your show because you're the average everyday guy with more access than I have. You can go into the locker room and ask the kind of questions off the record that I want to ask. And so you can bring that back to me in a way that I don't necessarily hear through the mainstream media. And that's been one of our strategies. But we use the players quite a bit to do that so that they have the opportunity to kind of get the word out as to what they really want to be known about a certain situation. So,
yeah. I think, you know, we don't really have the problem of kind of getting front office involved. We have our own editors and writers. But I think it's a question that's important to us, particularly in the context of us now operating the back end for the club websites. And you know, that exercise is really very much about, you know, creating a platform and giving the clubs more tools. But at the end of the day, the club sites are successful because they are the closest interaction with the fans. You know, the league site is a great place for people to get information across the league and, you know, free agency and big league events. But by and large, fans don't have affinity to the league. Fans have affinity to a club. And so you're a Dallas Cowboys fan or a Washington Redskins fan. So we recognize the importance of that. And in this initiative of building the club sites, you know, we're kind of helping the clubs, encouraging clubs to produce more local content, more videos, more articles, more photos, and give the fans what they want, more access to the team, to the club executives, to coaches, and really kind of enhance that local connection.
Is there a mantra or maybe a mission statement that's handed down from 280 Park Avenue, the league office, whether it's Greg Aiello, Joe Brown, or even the commissioner himself, or even Steve Bornstein, who heads up NFL Network, you know, that kind of dictates, here's what we're about? Or is it more of a, we just got to react?
Yeah, I mean, the challenge is, you know, the league is a unique operating entity. You know, the league isn't a company, it's not a corporation. The league is kind of owned by the 32 owners, and you got to remember, each of these owners is kind of a you know, a billionaire, you know, business person in their own rights, and they have strong opinions about how they want to run their club and what's right for them. So I don't think it's in the league's best interest to dictate how a club decides to program their
sure.
their site. It's really, every club, you know, approaches it differently. You know, for some clubs, it's about selling tickets. For other clubs who sell out all their games, you know, it's about maybe merchandise, or in your case, it's a news and information site. And so every club approaches it differently. You know, what we want to do is kind of push best practices and you know, standards and try and get people to understand the benefits of producing more local content, what kind of content people want, you know, discipline about determining what content is useful and interesting to fans and helping them get that content.
And I know that there's a specific example, actually a few I can cite from the Giants, but I'd like to talk about when you used your club website to get the message out about something that wasn't necessarily breaking news or an off-the-field incident. To give you an example, 2 years ago, was it 3 years ago? I get 2 years ago. When we signed Plaxico Burress, I don't know if you remember this, but anyone who follows football or follows the Giants, we had initially met with his agent at the time. He was a free agent with the Steelers, and we brought him in. And a lot of teams do this. A lot of teams, if you leave the building without signing a deal, they kind of feel like, all right, we're done, everything's over, because they don't want you to go and shop your offer around. But anyway, we had pretty lengthy discussions with Plaxico's agent at the time, whose name escapes me right now. And we gave them what we thought was a more than aggressive offer, considering the free market, the wide receiver pool that year. And, you know, we told them, listen, we're going above and beyond because we don't want you to walk out the door without signing this deal. You know, you're not going to walk out and shop this around. They left. They decided to decline it. And we used our website to put out a statement from our general manager saying, and this is, we've never done this before, but he went out of his way to make a statement that said, we are no longer interested in Plaxico Burress. We have rescinded our offer. Now, he did that to send a message saying, we gave you a really good offer here, and don't go to Minnesota. He was on a plane to go to Minnesota and think you're going to turn around and tell him, well, here's what the Giants are offering. What are you going to give me? That was unique in that we're never really aggressive with how we address news that exists, breaking news. But for us to come out and use the website to put out a statement was unique for us. We've also done in the past when we felt is anyone here from New York or Giant fans at all? Okay, so there's something special about all of us, and the thing with Giant fans is tradition. It's a lot of years. We have a lot of older season ticket holders. As a result, during those nice warm weather, 1 o'clock games, they're not as raucous as a crowd as you need when you got a big divisional game coming into town. It's kind of embarrassing. You go to Kansas City, and every game, those people are on their feet, day in and day out. So when we have a big game coming down and we know it's a 1 o'clock game, the weather's warm, I know it sounds terrible, we know we're going to get the older traditional season ticket holders who are used to watching the game and enjoying it a certain way, most of the time sitting down. So we've had to sometimes put out a message, kind of a call to the fans where Coach Coughlin and players saying, listen, we need you guys to get up and get loud. And I'll be honest with you, those games where we do that, that stadium is rocking. So those are two examples where we've used the website not just to report on news or tell a story, but actually get the word out. Have you, Derek, or and I know this may not apply to NFL.com, but Derek or Jen, do you remember using the website in a way, whether it's with negotiations as we had with Plaxico Burress or on anything else that was you're trying to get the word out doesn't apply to what we've talked about so far?
Similar, kind of opposite, is I think 2 years ago, the defensive coordinator at the Ravens, Rex Ryan, put out the message for fans to please be quiet during during the defensive times, and they're trying to get it together and be loud when the other team's on offense. And it's like, we just need 5 seconds to get that play called, and then everyone can go into an uproar. But if they could just give us that 5 seconds. And fans really took to it and even brought signs reminding other fans, for that 5 seconds of silence for defense to get it together.
Yeah, we use it for, I guess, similar purposes. We're trying to get the word out this year for our playoff game that we wanted to do a whiteout where everybody wore white. Those kinds of things, we certainly use the website as an opportunity to do that. But more to specific to actual news, we use the website all the time. And this was one of the main arguments for why we think it's important for teams to be a little more transparent is because we use our website in a lot of ways to refute inaccurate rumors that are out there in the mainstream media. There are a lot of times when the media will put out a report that we know is blatantly wrong, and it gives us the opportunity, because we're so transparent and because we try to report the news always, no matter what it might be, we gain the trust of our users. And because we have that trust, when there is a story that's out there floating around that's absolutely inaccurate, it gives us a way to be able to go to our fans who trust us and say, that's a bad report. That report is inaccurate. It's wrong. Don't trust it. And sure enough, 9 times out of 10, it comes back to slam the other media outlet that put it out there that it really was wrong, and they end up retracting the statement. So that's more, I guess, how we use it on a regular basis.
Sure. The Chiefs, at one point, and I don't know if Lance is here or not, but early on they created this fictional character called Rufus Dawes. Do you remember that?
Remember,
and Lance actually spoke about that at the league meetings, where they had one of their graphic artists kind of draw up this caricature of this guy, Rufus Dawes. He's the insider, and his whole job each week was to dispel rumors, and it was a way for the team to unofficially, officially dispel rumors, and whether it was trade or just what was hearsay going on in the locker room. And it was pretty successful in that it drew a lot of attention to their website, because the local media would pick it up saying, okay, we've been reporting this for last week, but Rufus Dawes on KCChiefs.com has said so on and so forth. What was interesting about that, this isn't really relevant in the content, but it kind of spurred this fan curiosity, like, who really is Rufus Dawes? They thought it was a real person. So finally the Chiefs had to come out and say he doesn't exist. He's just kind of like a collaboration of our PR department and web staff. But just talking about fans just now, I would like to talk about that a little bit. Message boards, generally are always interesting, but when you're dealing with a brand, a team where there's so much affinity and emotion, they can really be challenging, to say the least. I know that the biggest challenge I had was, okay, so you could put in all your filters and all that, but you're gonna have fans from other teams are gonna come to Giants.com to talk smack on the message boards. I had to start equipping users that I could trust with privilege that would allow them to moderate. The Redskins did something interesting where, you know, most teams have your official message boards. The Redskins had a fan site that was very popular called Extreme Skins. And rather than kind of reinvent the wheel to compete, the Redskins just went out and kind of
bought them. So they're happy because they're financially supported, and we're happy because they were already established. They're very successful, very popular. They had a great reputation. So now we get kind of one-stop shopping for our fans because they can come and read the news on our site and then discuss it with people that they've been discussing with for years. I think it wouldn't have made any sense to try to take that group of people and bring them onto our own message boards. They already had moderators set up. People were already really comfortable with it. And I think it would have created more of a divide, which is something the Ravens tried to do. And it created a divide between the two main message boards. The Redskins were lucky because there really was one source for this. We've recently added live chat, though, which I would love Dallas to add one because all their Dallas fans come to our live chat and it's a royal headache every day to take care of those problems. But it's we've run into problems because we let them live chat on our news pages and the kids after school and then, you know, the occasional Dallas fans that come on every single day, they kind of ruin it for the rest. But it's been a really interesting concept for message boards for us so far. It's been popular.
Yeah, that's exactly why we don't do chat on DallasCowboys.com.
Well, that's actually what I was waiting for it to get to Derek, because you guys have just kind of...
Yeah, we did chat a few years ago, and long story short, we ran into a situation where there was a group of about 10 fans, and they would meet every day in this chat on the chat board, and literally, I mean, the conversations would veer so far from football, and... And the problem that we ran into was we are considered a family brand, and we have, you know, kids coming onto our sites, and parents trust that when their kids are going to DallasCowboys.com, they're not going to see something that's inappropriate. And we were getting lots of feedback from parents saying, hey, I was on your site, and I noticed this chat room, and the things that were being talked about in there were, you know, just inappropriate, very inappropriate. And we tried talking to the guys and trying to get them to tone it down and, you know, trying to give them, you know, make them feel as though, you know, they're still wanted on the site, but that they had to kind, you know, just figure out a way to be a little more responsible with the content. And what we finally came to the conclusion of was that it was just too tough to keep that area from being inundated with the wrong kind of content. So what we ended up doing long term was we created a fan forum where now our message boards are, we have a panel of about 6 or 7 fans who comprise this board, and they are the ones who moderate our forums. They create the community. So in a lot of ways, because they're a part of the community, people tend to listen to them. And when people get out of line, they, you know, they kind of talk to them offline a little bit. If they can't get them to cooperate, then they'll go ahead and they'll push them off the forums. But that we found to be a much better way to do it for us, just because, and it had nothing at all to do with them talking negatively about the team. As I said before, we love press, whether it's good press or bad press. But at the end of the day, we just couldn't afford to have them soil our brand like that, and that's why we moved away from chat.
Yeah, what's the league position on? I know in the past message boards weren't there, and I know you're talking about community.
Yeah, I think it is kind of baked into the same pie there that message boards are really much more effective at a club level than at the league level. And you know, the situation you're describing, Derek, is really common. I mean, that's the kind of the classic problem for social networking. Is the best way to do it is user moderated. You don't feel like a heavy-handed, you know, administrator from, you know, whoever set up the community. The challenge is getting to a scale to allow that to happen. But you know, the great thing about our content is that there are very, very passionate fans, and so generally, if you can get a community of any interesting interesting size, somebody will step forward and do that moderation for you. So we don't have message boards specifically, but actually I kind of wanted to address, I was watching the Meebo chat here, and so kind of the big question around a lot of this stuff is official position versus unofficial position, and there were some people who were saying that they go to blogs before they go to official sites, which is kind of how we opened this, and so I know that we're in a couple minutes here getting to the Q&A anyway, so I kind of wanted to ask for the people who do go to blogs before they go to the official sites, you know, what are you getting there? What is compelling there? Is it maybe they have more interaction or do you like getting the content before it's kind of officially approved content? What do you like about those sites? Anybody?
Can I ask what team you root for or you visit a lot?
I have nothing bad to say about them.
I'm a Skins fan, but I'd actually like to comment from, I don't know, I'm also a Red Sox fan. That would be listening and watch really hard. There are a couple of just fantastic blogs for the Red Sox that the thing that's really attractive is they speak with them. So like Surviving Grady, these guys speak with a really distinctive style, one that might not work on a conventional site, but that they've got like kind of a persona and they're working within that. And the other thing would be having a really specific focus, like a lot of the sites that focus on like really specific statistical analysis, or really focusing on, you know, like Deadspin and all this social stuff, right? Like they're the ones who are more talking about the talking. So being able to zoom in on one, like, you know, slice out a niche, yeah. Like,
and so do you see those as kind of complementary products? I mean, because it kind of, you know, the way you describe them, it's almost like if you incorporated those kinds of features into an official site, it really doesn't enhance the experience. They maybe kind of don't work. So, I mean, is it just healthy to have this kind of competition and information and have other people participate and...
But a lot of it is, yeah, I mean, the people who go read Yanks fan, Sox fan, mm-hmm. the people who read, like, Baseball Prospectus, I'm sorry, yeah. I'm doing this off of Baseball Prospectus, I love what they call them, really, so baseball. You know, the Baseball Prospectus, these are the guys who are willing in the most powerful statistical tools available. Now, some people love that, but that's not for everyone.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know, you know.
This is actually a good, you know, because we got 15 minutes is where we wanted to kind of open it up to Q&A anyway. All right. I'll just start from right here.
How do you guys feel about social media? Have you thought about getting your brand onto Facebook? What do you think of that? You know,
there are microphones, too, in the back for anyone after this question.
Okay. So I'd like it both from a team perspective and from the NFL perspective.
Sure. I know that... at the Giant, again, because we skew closer to we're very concerned about our product, and Derek spoke about our brand and message boards and having your brand on a someone's desktop alongside user-generated content that you can't always – you can try to moderate and approve, but you don't have 100% control over. I know that we have skewed on the side of really we're just not – it doesn't fit our model because of the sensitivity. So I don't think there is going to be a social networking site – integrated into the Giants or anything that's used to generate content or even a Giants MySpace or a Facebook page, at least in the foreseeable future, just because of you've got this brand that's 80 plus years old and it is about family and it's about tradition. And until we find kind of that perfect solution to making sure that, you know, we can control that content, I don't think that's going to work, at least that's from our end. I know, Jamie, but you're actively
Yeah, I mean, and the reality is for us at the league level, the real challenge is that we talk about kind of church and era, state and federal, and that's really, in my mind, kind of a state's right issue, that's really to the clubs to decide. I've been in the league now just over a year, and it is very much 32 completely different opinions on almost any topic you want to pick, but social media is an incredibly polarizing issue already, and it varies so wildly. Even among kind of the internet directors, some of them, you know, like Derek, really have great access to their team executives and to their ownership. There are other clubs where that just isn't the case. And you know, as it kind of was pointed out on the Bebo chat, there are a lot of older owners, and they're not as technically sophisticated, don't really understand it. It's very much kind of an individual club decision on how they want to approach it. I'm a Lions fan. Take that, Red Sox fan. And the challenge is, you know, they don't necessarily want participatory culture. They understand that people are going to say they suck, and that's not necessarily why fans go to their site. You know, fans go to their official site because they want to know the great things about the club, and they want to really reinforce why it's great to be a Lions fan. And so maybe in their case, it's not as interesting to them to have it. There are other clubs like Buffalo Bills, right? So they recognized that they weren't going to handle participatory culture, social media themselves, and they reached out to a local community fan site that was really doing great and said, we just want to feature your content. We don't want to buy you. We don't want any active hand in how you control your site. We just want to expose that content to fans and our site, make it a little bit of a destination for you to get that kind of conversation between different sides of the mind.
All right, next question. Oh, sorry. Fantasy football. That's a huge social aspect of football on the internet right now. And the NFL kind of came into the game a little bit late. And just want to get your analysis on how that's impacting what the league is doing, what they think. Are they trying to catch up on that aspect? And how you're trying to catch the next wave of fan interaction on the internet?
That's definitely, there's not much opportunity at the club level, but really
sure,
at the league level.
Sure, I can take that. And I think, you know, I don't know that the league's necessarily late to the game. I think, you know, in as much in the last year we took over NFL.com and now we're operating that in-house and we continue to outsource our fantasy game to CBS, to Sportsline. But our fantasy game, you know, depending on fluctuation, we're kind of the number two or number three biggest fantasy game, depending on what statistics you look at. So we're big. I mean, we're competitive, but, you know, the same reason that we brought NFL.com in-house, that we wanted to have a more active hand in presenting our brand to really create more connection with our fans directly. You know, it's something we talk about. You know, what's the right way for us to approach fantasy, and where do we take it from here? So, I think kind of embedded in that is this idea that fantasy is participatory culture. Fantasy is social media. It is kind of this massively multiplayer game. And, you know, all of the people who play fantasy football ultimately play it on the back of the product that, you know, these guys put on the field every Sunday. So it makes sense for the NFL to have kind of the best fantasy experience. And so right now we're trying to figure out how to make that happen.
I want to go back to the blocks topic you brought up a few minutes ago. How do you guys feel in general, and this is for anyone, I know this from a baseball perspective too, but I assume if you haven't had this encountered this, you probably will, the concept of players blogging directly, the Curt Schilling blog, the Agent Zero and Washington blog. First, do you have any examples of that where you've had to handle that? And two, is that just a hands-off issue, or have you done anything with that?
Well, one of the biggest problems for us in doing something like that has been the reliability of players. You're in a situation where you're talking about guys who spend, and I don't think most fans really have a true appreciation for how much time these guys really spend on their craft. I mean, it is a job. It is a job where they spend lots of hours at the facility, either working out, watching film, practicing. They spend an inordinate amount of time, and then on top of that, that's time away from their families in the evenings and at night. And so when they have a free minute, the one day a week during the season that they have off, which is Tuesdays, most of them are out doing community service. So they have very little time with their families. They spend a lot of time at work. So getting them to commit to something that they have to do on a regular basis, like making a blog, that is far removed from what their profession really is a very difficult prospect in a lot of ways. So for us, what we found a better option of is we'll create, let's say, a segmented piece of content that we may call, From the Locker Room or something. And we'll go into the locker room each week and we'll take a different player and kind of pull them to the side and do a quick Q&A. It gives you the same kind of feel, But at the same time, it's not requiring the player to commit to too much time. And that's really the focus. If you have to make them commit to a lot of time, it's very difficult to keep them engaged.
I think, and I'm sorry, and know that you wanted to comment there, but was the question really kind of the other side of it? Do clubs censor if a player wants to blog? Does the club take any participation in whether or not they're able?
Both sides. I think that part, I heard that from that part. So the other part, from the push perspective, what if the player wants to sort of active, like for showing their problem
race, maybe? Yeah, I mean, you guys have been in the league much longer than I have, but I would imagine that would be welcomed at any club. If a player wants to blog and wants to have a more active connection with fans, I don't think any...
It would definitely be approved and censored. You know,
the devil in the details in that is there talk back? Can fans respond to it? You know, is it a one-way discussion or a two-way discussion?
And truthfully, you have to consider the future of that player on the team. If it's someone that you don't expect that might not be around the whole season,
like rookie,
you probably don't want to start with that. We got lucky last year and got Brandon Lloyd to blog for us all training camp. He's a journalism major. He wrote it all himself with his agent, and unfortunately,
so if you're
he's
a, player,
a free agent right now.
He's
no
longer. Yeah, if you're a player and you go to your ownership and say, I want to blog, and they say, we really don't think that's a good idea.
Why don't you wait? See if you make the final cut. Well, you see that. We do rookie training camp journals, but I'm not going to... It's nice to take an undrafted free agent, but here's the trick to this, and we can speak to a little bit more, is that everyone knows about the stars. The fans want to know about the undrafted rookie free agent that's there for the tryout. The problem, and this is what we've had, is our front office and personnel guys, like, listen, this is a guy that we kind of actually don't want to draw attention to because he's under the radar, and so as much as it's going to be a great story, you can't write about it, which is kind of counter to what you're thinking is, but you do have to be selective. You had a...
I have sort of a related question. I work for a startup called SayNow, and we do mobile voice broadcasting. We work primarily, our main users are musicians.
I think I met with you last year or
did
someone
I?
With you
okay,
at SayNow.
Yeah, they send voice messages out to their fans. So when they're on tour, if they've got a story to break, the fans hear directly from the star themselves on their phone. And we've only started kind of thinking about sports. We have like Vernon Davis and Sean Merriman signed up with us right now, but we haven't really like actively like talked to people like you. And so we're wondering, I mean, just listening to how sort of tentative you guys are about breaking sensitive news or talking about sensitive news like arrest or, you know, drug issues, I'm wondering, do you think it's actually a good thing, a positive thing to give a athlete direct access to
direct
the
without filter?
Yeah,
no.
So without a filter, so if they have something to say, they call the number and it just goes out to the fans.
No, I don't think direct without filter. It's a very emotional game, and it's, you know, whether it's an on the field thing or during the season or off season when it comes to dealing with your contract, absolutely not. I think direct, if you're the official team side, I don't think it's a good idea to give them direct, just kind of direct from voice to listener. Not at all. I think it has to be filtered.
Every team has a PR department for a very good reason.
So you think that it's just not something...
I think the technology with what you're talking about, maybe this is something we could talk about afterwards, it's definitely applicable to athletes and sports websites, absolutely. It would definitely be something that would be moderated, like, all right, Eli, well, not Eli, he's such a good guy, I would never say anything, but I don't know. Someone in the past, it may have been a guy that you had to worry about, like maybe with T.O. at one point earlier, you know, all right, T.O., you're going to send a message out, but let's record this message first before you go out, and someone's going to sit down and monitor. Technology, absolutely. Straight, just allowing them kind of free range, no.
Well, the thing is, a lot of the big players right now have their own websites. Like, T.O. has his own website, so they already have a conduit to be able to speak directly to the fan in a lot of instances, and that's not controlled by the team, by the team's PR department or anything else. That is their official way to be able to talk, and I know when he was going through the issues with the Eagles, he was using his website mainly as a source for him to be able to put out a lot of content about the situation that was unfiltered by the club. So
they're actually allowed to do that?
There are no restrictions from the league's perspective or the team's perspective that stops them from putting out their own websites and putting out their own information.
We got a couple more minutes, so as many questions as possible.
Hi, thanks. Thanks for holding the panel here. I live in Nashville, but I moved from Cleveland last year, so I'm a big Browns fan. And one of the things I struggle with is not being able to see my Browns on Sunday. I've got to go to, you know, a sports bar or something and see it, and I can't be alone in this. I'm just wondering, at some point, are we going to be able to see NFL games online, and it's not going to require, say, an NFL ticket subscription as a prerequisite,
right,
and
now
then a $50 package on top of that? It seems really, really difficult to get that online.
That's the way now. I mean, the NFL, the Sunday Ticket Package on DirecTV, and then there's a companion product called Supercast that,
right.
That you can get on top of it. That's kind of the way to do it now.
That's a huge investment for the average fan.
Yeah, absolutely. I completely understand. And you know, it's really kind of not my domain for sure. It's in kind of the broadcast committee of ownership and how they decide to do that. I wish I could help you, but
I understand. That's maybe not tangential to today's discussion, but that to me would be mm-hmm. exactly what I expect to see in a team's yeah. website, the ability to see their broadcast. So maybe something cool. for the future.
No, that's a great point. Thank you.
I work for the Spurs in San Antonio in their broadcast production department, and I know with that organization there's a lot of harping from basketball operations saying you shouldn't have this during the games, or especially for .com. Spurs.com doesn't really have a lot because as the website of their organization, they don't want to have any of the backstory or why this happened or why this happened, so they're not allowed to report on a lot of stuff. I guess most recently would be the Brent Berry situation, as everyone kind of knows that follows the NBA that he's going to stick with the Spurs, but that hasn't been reported on our website. And I was just wondering for you guys, has there been any, I guess, taboo subjects from upper management saying, you know what, the press is going to get this from other sources, but we're not going to comment on it, and I don't think it should be reported on our own website?
I'm sure that there have been stories that we have absolutely just never addressed at all. Like off the top of my head, I can't think of them, but they would involve off the field, you know, incidents or, you know, rumored stuff. So yes, absolutely. I know that I can't believe I can't think of them right now, but yes, there's tons of them. I probably can't think of them because I've been brainwashed not to remember them or ever tell anyone, but I'm sure there's incidents that were reported in the paper that are public knowledge that we just decided never to address. I'm getting the signal that we're running out of time. The next session's about a half hour away from this. Or an hour?
Can we take the last question?
Yeah,
I'll take the last.
Yep.
Pittsburgh.
I had a question. Like, how do you deal with players blogging? Like, I know, like, last season or the off season, Donovan McNabb blogged that he would want like a playmaker, and that was covered like by the NFL Network. And I just wonder how teams react to that kind of thing, like players voicing their. Opinions about team issues like that.
For us, it's a good thing. Again, it's just fodder. It's more stuff for fans to be able to discuss, and that drives more people to the site, and it drives more people to take part in interactive stuff. So for us, it's a good thing. But I do think there are a lot of clubs that don't take that approach. They aren't necessarily as happy about their players kind of voicing that through the online medium. But.
Is that it? One more here?
I'm sorry, say that again.
Pay for the domain name, Cowboys.com.
Oh, you know, for us, it was a situation where for the value, for the cost, we figured we've already invested so much money over the years in driving home the DallasCowboys.com, 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 and also understanding the law with regards to domains. The law says that there's not another football-type site that can take Cowboys.com and actually put football-related content on it. So, all that being said, to go out and spend six figures on a domain that we've already spent millions investing in another domain and promoting that, it just didn't make financial sense for us. And I know there are those out there that would say, well, it's a long-term investment, that sort of thing. But the fact of the matter is, it just didn't make sense for us from a business perspective. We've already invested the money in DallasCowboys.com, and we've already driven a huge amount of traffic to DallasCowboys.com. We really didn't see that as a huge benefit, certainly relative to the cost. It was one of those things where it just got – that's what happens sometimes when you have non-technical people involved in technical decisions. Sometimes there's a lapse in judgment. But, you know, it is what it is. At the end of the day, I think it actually ended up going back on the market and sold for even more than what was supposed to be out there. And that's fine. You know, again, we didn't want to get in a situation where we were, you know, really bidding on this thing because we really didn't see the huge value or upside for us long term.
We know that this has kind of come to an end. They're opening the doors. We're free here for the next half hour. So just so you know, in this same room, there's going to be another panel involving sports. Okay, another panel involving sports. It's going to be more e-commerce. I know this was kind of an overall kind of high-level discussion about content. This is going to be a little bit more technical applications regarding what's unique about sports websites. What are the challenges that have either spurred some innovation in e-commerce or have relied on innovations in e-commerce to address needs? So I would encourage you all to sit in on that. We'll have representatives from the Redskins, AmericanEagle.com, and another party that name escapes me right now, but they'll be here in about half hour or so. Thanks again.